Hi, this is Dane Smith from the Mountain Express in Asheville.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Really good, thank you.
Thank you so much for taking a minute to speak with me. I really appreciate it. I wanted to start by talking a little bit about Have One on Me. Your last album was this really ambitious, sprawling, orchestral affair with tracks that were over 15 minutes long. Did you know going into Have One on Me that this also was going to be such a big project?
I think I kind of envisioned it as being like this. I think I was approaching it and thinking of it as a project that was born out of a desire to make something simple.
Yeah.
It's sort of funny in retrospect, but a lot of the tools or prompts that I was giving myself for writing were made in an effort to, try to do something simple. Like, I was writing a lot of the songs on the piano, specifically because I'm not a very strong piano player. So songs that ended up being pop songs eventually began as piano songs because I just wanted to focus on the sort of structure and the bones of the song and not so much on the embellishment or the athletics, I guess, of the actual, like, instrumentation.
Yeah.
And that was when I first started out the whole project. I guess that's the only preconception I had in mind, was that I wanted to make a record that was about melody and chord structure more than it was about, finger picking or, like, you know, the sort of just technique side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And as I went along, certainly at one point I registered that I had a lot of material. But I think that for a long time, the fact of the album being the size that it is was sort of in the back of my mind without my actually fully acknowledging it or including it in my plan. I think I assumed that at some point it would become clear to me which songs needed to be divided from which songs in order to create, several freestanding albums that had nothing to do with each other.
Yeah.
Or else maybe certain songs would be set aside and just not used at all or used someday far in the future. And I just sort of, as I was doing the work, I guess, would sort of had that thought in the back of my mind, and it wasn't until I had written quite a few of the songs and started thinking of them in terms of an album that I realized that I couldn't really identify the, dividing aesthetic principle that would make them more than one album, that would make the songs constitute more than one album, more than one story arc. To me, they felt so connected to each other and bound to each other that it felt sort of like it would be really redundant to release multiple freestanding albums that were ostensibly not connected if I tried to do that. So I guess I just, after looking at it long enough, realized that the structure was sort of three part, which, I don't really know how I realized that. Just, I was working so hard to break the songs into two halves, and it didn't work. And at some point when I started to think of it in terms of a grouping of three, it just made sense. It felt sort of like beginning, middle, end, or like morning, noon, night,
yeah.
Sort of the three acts of a play. Somehow the story fit along that sort of structure.
Yeah.
For me.
Well, could you tell me a little more about the inspiration behind the album? It seems like a lot of it deals with Nevada City. Is that accurate?
For me, a lot of the songs, not all of them, but a lot of the songs sort of circle around the idea of home, either being home or being away from home, or trying to define what home even is and sort of commenting on the way that definition keeps changing.
Yeah.
As time passes, and and those sorts of things. And I think there's also, you know, a sort of musical connection there where the mood or, like, I guess the tone of a lot of the songs for me connects back to what I think of as a California sound, which is kind of a very, like, for me, probably different from what it might be for other people, but it's kind of a magpie version of what the California sound would be, you know, taking little bits and pieces of everything that I grew up listening to and that I associate with the West and with sort of like pioneering the sound of the West. You know, so that connects back to home as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, it seems to me that that home is very important to you. Is it? How do you deal with being on the road so much and having to be away for such long periods of time?
Well, one thing I started doing when this album came out for the first time was I started doing very short tours. I mean, relatively short tours. Most of my tours are no more than 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously quite a bit shorter than, you know, a lot of the ones I've done in the past, and I think a lot of tours that people normally do. But I think that's a big help right there. The trade-off is that it means that the tour kind of never ends. You know, I do 3 weeks on and then a few weeks off, and then I'm right back on again, and that'll just keep going through the springtime, because it takes so long to cover all the ground if you're not just doing it in one fell swoop. But
yeah,
it's still worth it for me. I mean, another thing to bear in mind is that when I talk about home, I don't always mean it in the most literal sense. Like, in many ways, for me, home is more of a feeling than a place. And so I just try to fit in as much stuff in my life, I guess, that creates that feeling.
Sure.
So just trying to be with my family as much as possible and, like, cooking and not leaving the house, whatever house I might be at. It doesn't need to be my house, but, you know what I mean? Just kind of, like, trying to carve out a little bit of sense of home wherever I am.
Yeah, yeah, of course. What do you do while you're on the road in your downtime? Do you have a chance to get out and, you know, have look around in the cities that you're at generally?
It's really bad, actually. I need to get better at that. I feel guilty because a lot of the folks in my band are such good travelers. You know, they work out, they, like, get up really early in the morning and they'll rent a bike and, like, tour whatever town we're in before I'm even awake, or go to a museum, or, you know, just experience the world. And meanwhile, I'm usually, like, fast asleep on the bus until it's time to sound check. So I'm not the most natural of travelers.
Yeah.
I'm learning to try to enjoy it and appreciate it more while it's happening, you know, because I know there's a lot of people in this world who would love nothing more than to be doing this. And by the way, I would love nothing more than to be doing this. It's just that the aspect of tour and of travel that is, like, really gung-ho is something that I haven't quite conquered yet. I have sleep trouble, and being on tour gives me more sleep trouble. So I'm usually up really, really, really late, and then I sleep really, really late. So
yeah, well, I mean,
I don't see a lot of the world.
Yeah, I would imagine that, you know, even if you didn't have problems sleeping, that you would have to keep pretty late hours playing shows and loading out and getting to hotels or any of that anyhow.
Yeah, that's very true. And also, I think it's probably common for people to have this issue, but I have major, like, post-show adrenaline always. Like, it takes me so long to calm down after I've played a show. I'm like really dopey and tired throughout the whole day, and then I'll play a show, and during the show and then after the show, I'm really, like, buzzy and manic feeling. So, you know, brain chemicals playing tricks on me.
Sure. I mean, I experienced that even as an audience member at shows.
Yeah.
You got to unwind after that.
Absolutely.
Well, I wanted to ask you a little about the rehearsals. I had read that you had gone to a cabin to do some rehearsals, you know, that eventually led to you sort of losing your voice for a while. But I think for fans, the idea of you and your band, you know, in the cabin in the woods, drinking whiskey and playing music is sort of this perfect scene. Can you tell me a little about that experience? And
The goal, like when we decided to do that sort of retreat, company retreat, it was, I think, the idea came from noticing how every time I make a record, I always end up preferring what the songs become after the record is finished, and I've started touring it a lot. You know, that's happened with solo stuff, and then it happened with East once I started touring. And I'm not even referring to the production or the arrangement on the album. I just mean my performances themselves, the way the singing feels, the way the harp playing feels, and also the way the arrangement starts feeling more like an organism that's interconnected and that's reacting to itself in different regions as, you know, as you move through the song. And I feel like basically there's no replacement for just playing a song live over and over again.
Yeah.
And I didn't really want to tour this recent record. I didn't want to tour Have One on Me before I had recorded it, because I think that kind of makes it less special in some ways. But I wanted to somehow capture the feeling that a song takes on when you've performed it over and over again. So I think that was the logic behind this little getaway that we did, was just trying to sit in the kitchen, sit in the living room, like, and just play as much music as possible right before, you know, just like constantly all day, every night, so that when I went in to record a few weeks, or it was like just a week later, actually, I was supposed to start singing my vocals just like a week after that, and the hope was that it would reflect that, and it would feel like lived in. The songs would feel lived in, and they would feel broken in. And I think that probably helped, but it just backfired a lot, because there was a wood stove that didn't ventilate right, and the whole place was just full of really thick smoke, and I was drinking lots of whiskey, as you said, and not warming up, which, you know, I've never, prior to experiencing vocal troubles last year, I had never been a person who warmed up, and I've sort of learned to start doing so, because I really fucked up my voice that time.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe too much of a good thing right before the recording.
Yeah, but I like to think that maybe, even though I ended up having to go on vocal rest and not sing or speak for a few months after that, so the whole vocal recording of the album ended up being deferred for a few months, I still like to think that that little Big Sur getaway that we had somehow helped, you know, that it somehow, you know, brought songs to life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, can you tell me a little about the cover for this album? Are those, a lot of those your things that were brought in for the shoot?
Yeah, that's all stuff that's in my house. It's just not set up like that in my house. It's kind of spread out throughout the house. So I just, like, late one night, kind of just moved everything into a pile, just started dragging everything into a corner of my living room. And then Annabelle, my friend Annabelle Marin, who is one of my best friends and takes most of the photos of me, she came to visit, and we did, actually it was right when I had come back from Big Sur, like a few days after that, and a few days before I was going to attempt to record, but she came to my house and we just shot a lot of rolls of film, and the funny thing is, I think that the photo that she, the photo we ended up using for the cover of the record is like one of the very first photos she took. Like it might have even been a test shot. And the photos are all black and white originally. And then Becca Mann, who's a painter, that's one of my good friends, she ended up painting over it. You know, the coloration is just paint, like I think just watercolor paint that she layered over and over and over again over the over the paint, over the photograph.
Oh, so wow. It was a very
collaborative effort over months.
Wow. It's a beautiful cover, and I really love the font too. That really struck me.
Thank you. I like that too.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested to get your take on Visions of Joanna Newsom. Have you had a chance to read any of that yet? And how does that feel to read such in-depth analysis of your own work?
I have not read the whole thing. I have read a little bit of it, and it's pretty obviously amazing that anybody would want to do that, and I'm very honored by it. I also feel when I started to read it, there were aspects of it that made me feel a little odd. You know, like, I think I said this already in an interview a few weeks ago, but it kind of made me feel, like, prematurely eulogized. Like, you know, like that someone, it was as though, like, it was like a retrospective or something, you know, like some analysis of my work, but it made me feel somehow like I was done. I mean, it didn't really make me feel that way, but it made me feel like if I went too deep into it, I would. You don't want to look from the outside in at your own work, I think.
Sure.
It's awesome that anyone else would want to, and it makes me want to do good work to inspire people that intelligent and imaginative to keep paying attention to the music on that level. You know, I would like to be worthy of that level of attention and that closeness of a reading, but I think that it's probably not a great idea for me to pay too much attention to the content of those analyses, those readings, because I think that level of self-consciousness can turn into self-reflection and sort of, you know, I don't mean self-reflection in the standard sense of, like, you know, pondering yourself, but I actually mean, like, when you set two mirrors in front of each other, you know, and it's that hyper self-consciousness. It can become stilted, and you can become frozen with the thought that, you know, you're thinking in terms of what people will think about the songs rather than just letting them be what they are and letting them have the life that they need to have and so forth.
Yeah.
I think you can just overthink it too much. But that said, it's awesome that anybody wanted to do that, and I'm really grateful to, you know, anybody for giving that much time to the music, of course.
Sure, sure. As strange as that must be, I'm sure it's equally as flattering. Well, I also know that you spent some time last spring touring with Robin Pecknold of Fleet Foxes, and that seemed like such a perfect match to me. I wondered, were you a big fan of the Fleet Foxes before that, and how did you convince Robin Pecknold to go out on the road and perform solo?
I was a little late in discovering Fleet Foxes. I had been hearing their name a lot for at least a year before I actually heard their music, because that's always what happens with me. I'm always it takes me so long to actually tune into anything out in the world music-wise. But I finally heard them somewhere and was just, like, immediately furious at everyone I know for not insisting that I listen to them sooner. You know,
yeah.
Everyone who's trying to get me to listen to them, I was like, well, you didn't explain it right. Like, you know, like, I didn't understand. So, you know, got really, really into their music. And then I saw somewhere that Robin had covered one of my songs. And, you know, obviously I was so excited. And then I was putting together this tour and, you know, tossing around various names as possibilities for openers. And I don't even know how it came up, but I was talking to someone from my label, and I was like, I wonder if Robin Pagnell would ever perform solo, you know, like, and someone asked him, and he said, yeah, so it was pretty great. And then we did a few tours together because we just had so much fun, and he has the raddest group of people around him as well, you know, the folks that he travels with,
mm-hmm.
And sort of them and my band and all of our people, we were just, felt like summer camp. It was just a big, big happy family.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that because that's kind of how I imagined it or wanted to imagine it. Any chance of any collaboration there between you guys at some point down the road?
I would love that. We haven't really ever talked about that, but I think that's the thing that I would definitely want to do at some point if he had a chance and if I had a chance. I feel like with those sorts of things, you just kind of wait till the perfect possibility comes up and then you do it. But
yeah,
we've sung together a few times, which was awesome. But we have no like formal collaborations.
Cool. Well, I think there are a lot of people out there who would really love to see that collaboration happen. The last thing I wanted to ask you about was the persona that was sort of created for you by the media as this elf or princess or fairy. How did you deal with that? That had to be hard when you're first beginning your career.
I think I had trouble with it when I was beginning, because, you know, I feel like when you're first starting out and you're making your first record and you're starting to tour and you've never toured before, I feel like when people don't understand your intention or don't understand where you're coming from, it feels like a huge deal. And then over time, it feels like less and less of a huge deal. Like, I think it becomes clearer over the years that that's just the reality, is that a lot of people, like every person I know who makes music has that headline, you know, has a thing that is said of them that feels somehow oddly derogatory in a way without necessarily coming from a place of negativity. You know, there's always a thing that everyone's like, so annoyed that always gets said about them. But that said, I mean, it doesn't really matter that much. I feel like that sort of represents the first wave of anybody paying attention to what you do, and then the people who actually are listening and care, like, you know, it doesn't really matter anymore to those people.
Yeah, I guess everyone gets pegged with their own headline.
Oh yeah, it's like you're a hippie or you're a misanthrope or you're like a fighter or you're a druggie or, you know, you're a misogynist or like you're a bimbo.
Yeah.
Or you're like, I don't know, so a trillion things, like.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, I got the elf thing. I was trying to use it to my advantage. A few months ago, I was trying to launch like a pretty heavy campaign to get the people making The Hobbit to let me audition. but they didn't let me.
Oh, they wouldn't even let you audition.
I really wanted to see if they would let me be an elf, because I feel like if I'm gonna have to deal with this fucking elf thing forever, like I should at least be able to enjoy it myself by, like,
you know, I mean, if,
getting to live in, like, Middle Earth.
Right.
For a little while.
If it could have landed you in The Hobbit, it might have almost been worth the whole thing just for that.
Absolutely. It would have felt like oh, this is my special purpose.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, this is what this is all about. Now I get to be in The Hobbit. It was not to be.
Oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry to hear that. That would have been pretty amazing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the support.
Yeah, I'm behind the campaign 100%. I
think the campaign has fizzled. I've got an official word. So.
Oh, no. Well.
Not happy.
It's too bad we didn't do this interview a few months ago. I would have pulled some strings for you.
Well, I appreciate the thought.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mention that because several months ago I was at a buddy's house watching The Hobbit, and out of nowhere we noticed in this one random scene for about 5 seconds, one of the guys from Flight of the Conchords was in it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I had the exact same realization a few months ago. I was rewatching all the Lord of the Rings movies, and then there's that one scene where he says, "My lady, it is time."
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. We paused the movie.
Yeah. Like that, and he has like 4 feet of hair and little elf ears and stuff.
Yeah. We paused the movie, and I mean, we lost it. I could not believe that he was in that scene, and I'd never noticed it. And then...
So awesome.
Yeah, yeah, very cool. I think you... It should have been you this time around, but I guess it's all it's all over now.
It should have been me. Oh, well.
Well, Joanna, thank you so much for talking to me this afternoon. It's really been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's nice speaking with you as well.